rock U.S. campuses from coast to coast amidst an intensifying police crackdown.
This movement extends far beyond the militarized gates of Columbia, beyond the city of New York, to the students of Gaza, whose classrooms have been burned to the ground.
We'll speak with a Columbia University student who was arrested last week, and with a graduate student at the University of Texas, Austin, where dozens of students were arrested yesterday. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden signed the $95 billion military spending package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan Wednesday after months of congressional wrangling. Biden said weapons would flow into Ukraine within hours and declared the day for world peace. The spending package includes $26 billion in more funding for Israel, which has now killed over 34,000 Palestinians in Gaza in just over 6 months. 14,000 of them are children, according to official numbers. The true toll is likely much higher as thousands remain mistrapped under rubble. Israel announced Wednesday it's readying two reserve brigades ahead of its expected ground invasion of Rafah, which the U.S. has publicly opposed. As Biden signed off on sending more arms to Israel, an independent task force released a report showing Israel's use of U.S.-provided weapons violates international humanitarian law. The task force was co-chaired by Palestinian-American legal expert Noura Erekat and Josh Paul, who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's support war on Gaza. In Gaza, the World Food Program warned this week widespread famine is approaching amidst the ongoing assault and obstruction of aid.
We estimate 30% of children below age of two is now acutely malnourished or wasted. And 70% of the population in the north is facing catastrophic hunger. There is reasonable evidence that all three famine thresholds, food insecurity and mortality, will be passed in the next 6 weeks.
This comes as more horrifying details emerge about three mass graves found at the Der Hospital in Khan Yunis. Rescue workers have uncovered nearly 400 bodies, including children, with some victims appearing to have been executed or buried alive. We'll have more on this amidst fears of a wider Middle East conflict. The Norwegian Refugee Council's chief, Jan Egeland, is warning Lebanon is, quote, on the brink of imploding. Over 90,000 people have been forced to flee their homes in southern Lebanon amidst daily cross-border attacks between Hezbollah and the Israeli army since October 7th. Student press against Israel's war on Gaza continuing to spread across U.S. campuses despite an intensifying police crackdown. In Los Angeles, police in riot gear arrested 93 people after students at the University of Southern California began an occupation of USC's Alumni Park to call for USC to divest from Israel.
Students at other schools have shown incredible bravery, incredible strength in continuing their occupations in the face of incredible repression from the universities, and we will do the same as well. And also, more importantly, the people of Palestine have continued, the people of Gaza have continued to show incredible determination and strength and resilience in their fight for liberation against the Israeli regime, against the genocide that they are experiencing. And so we hope to embody the same spirit of resistance.
The USC protest came a week after the school canceled the commencement speech by the valedictorian Asna Tabassum, who'd export for Palestinians. USC has since canceled all outside speakers at this year's ceremonies. At the University of Texas, Austin, school officials called in local and state who violently crushed a student attempt to set up an encampment on the university's South Mall. At least 50 people were arrested, including at least one journalist. Some faculty at UT Austin are going on strike today to protest the student arrests. In a statement, the teachers wrote, quote, "We have witnessed police punching a female student, knocking over a legal observer, dragging a student over a chain link fence, and violently arresting students simply for standing at the front of the crowd," unquote. In Massachusetts, police made at least 108 arrests as officers broke up a student encampment at Emerson College in Boston overnight. Meanwhile, students at Harvard University defied school orders and began a tent encampment yard, which has been closed since Tuesday. And earlier this morning, police moved in and started arresting Princeton students as they were setting up their own Gaza solidarity encampment. On Wednesday, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson faced heckling and boos when he visited Columbia University. Johnson called for Biden to send in the National Guard to bring order to the campus where students set up the Gaza Solidarity encampment last week. Johnson also called for Columbia President Manoush Shafiq to step down. Columbia and Barnard students criticized Johnson's visit.
What makes us scared or threatened is the president bring NYPD to our campus. Is the people like him to see bring the guard to our campus. We don't need that. That is the thing make us feel scared and threatened.
We'll have more on the student protests later in the show. The court appeared deeply divided as it heard arguments Wednesday on Idaho's near-total abortion ban. The Biden administration argues Idaho's law violates the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act by only providing emergency abortion care when a patient is facing death. This is U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar.
Women in Idaho today are not getting treatment. They are getting airlifted out of the state to Salt Lake City and to neighboring states where there are health exceptions in their laws because the doctors are facing mandatory minimum 2 years in criminal prosecution. The doctors can't provide the care because until they can conclude that a prosecutor looking over their shoulder won't second guess that maybe it wasn't really necessary to prevent death.
The court's ruling will have major implications for at least half a dozen other states with similar bans. As arguments were delivered, protesters rallied outside the Supreme Court against the Idaho ban.
It clearly states that women don't matter, that the fetus they carry matters more. They're conduits instead of people. They're not even given proper access to health treatment and health care that they require.
The Supreme Court is taking up another major case today as it considers Donald Trump's claims of immunity against criminal prosecution. In more abortion news, the Arizona House on Wednesday repealed the 1864 near-total abortion ban just 2 weeks after Arizona's Supreme Court revived the Civil War-era law. Democrats were joined by three House Republicans. The repeal must now pass the act before Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs can sign it, which would reinstate Arizona's 2022 law, which bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Yolanda Bejarano, chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, spoke following yesterday's vote.
The stakes in this election cycle could not be higher, and the contrast between our two parties could not be clearer. Democrats are fighting for abortion rights. We are fighting to protect Arizona values. And the Republican Party is taking away our rights and our control of Donald Trump.
In other news from Arizona, a grand jury indicted former President Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, lawyer Rudy Giuliani, and others for plotting to use fake electors in Arizona to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss. Meanwhile, in Michigan, a pretrial hearing revealed Trump, Meadows, and Giuliani indicted co-conspirators in the Michigan Attorney General's case against fake electors. Prosecutors say all three men directly participated in a plot to replace Michigan's electoral votes for Biden with electoral votes for Trump. In Iran, a court has sentenced hip-hop artist Tumaj Salehi to death for supporting the 2022 popular thing in his songs. Tumaj Salehi, who is already serving a six-year jail sentence, is appealing the ruling. In related news, rights groups are sounding the alarm over escalating attacks by security forces on women who are out in public without a hijab. Arrested women have reported physical, verbal, and sexual attacks by Iranian authorities. TikTok says it'll challenge legislation signed by President Biden yesterday, which forces TikTok's Chinese parent company ByteDance to divest from its U.S. operations or be banned. Critics have described the ban as a form of censorship fueled by anti-Chinese sentiment. This is TikTok CEO Shouji Chu addressing the app's users on TikTok.
As you may have heard, Congress passed the bill that the president signed into law that is designed to ban TikTok in the United States. That will take TikTok away from you and 170 million Americans who find good connection on our platform. Make no mistake, this is a ban on TikTok and a ban on you and your voice. Politicians may say otherwise, but don't get confused. Many who sponsored the bill admit a TikTok ban is the ultimate goal.
And back here in New York, 33 climate activists were arrested Wednesday after shutting down Citigroup's global headquarters to demand the bank stop funding fossil fuels. Activists blockaded every entrance to the building. You can see our coverage of the story at democracynow.org. Some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. In Gaza, medics and civil defense workers are still recovering bodies from mass graves found at the Nasser Medical Complex for the sixth day in a row following Israel's siege on the hospital. Over 320 have so far been discovered, including women, children, patients and medical staff, according to Al Jazeera. Another mass grave with up to 400 bodies was discovered here at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Civil defense officials have said bodies were found stacked together and showed indications of field executions or being buried alive. The United Nations and the European Union have called for an independent probe into the mass graves, and the White House on Wednesday also called for an investigation. This comes as Israel continues its bombard Gaza with at least 43 people killed over the last 24 hours, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. At least five of them were killed in the southern city of Rafah, where Israel has conducted near-daily airstrikes as it prepares for an offensive in the city.
A spokesperson for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government told Reuters Israel is moving ahead with a ground operation in Rafah, but gave no timeline. An unnamed Israeli defense official said Israel had bought 40,000 tents, each able to hold between 10 and 12 people, to house Palestinians evacuated from Rafah ahead of its assault on the city. Israeli news outlets report Israel will forcibly evacuate civilians to the nearby city of Khan Yunis, which has been virtually destroyed by Israeli forces. Over 1.3 million Palestinians are seeking shelter in Rafah, the southernmost city in Gaza. We go now to Rafah in Gaza, where we're joined by Akram Al-Sattari, a journalist based in Gaza. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Akram. Just moments ago, Palestinian officials held a press conference in Rafah regarding the mass graves at the Nasser Medical Complex. Can you tell us the latest? I know there's a delay in the broadcast.
Good morning, Amy, to you and all the viewers. I have just come back from Khan Yunis area. I was at Nasser Hospital. I spoke to the civil defense officer who is now giving this press conference about the situation in Nasser Hospital and about the number of the people who are killed, the way they were killed, and an account of the potential suffering they have been seeing even before they did. It looked like the three different mass graves are containing around 700 bodies. Up to this particular moment, around 400 bodies were unearthed and discovered. 300 bodies or even more are still on the ground. The bulldozer, one bulldozer, because of the very limited resources is working there for the sake of just digging out the bodies. Family members are lined up there, trying and rushing with passion and with great deal of sorrow to identify the bodies of their dear. Some of them manage to identify the bodies. Then you hear the outcry, you hear the people screaming, crying, and mourning the death of their dears. But at the very same time, they feel a little bit relieved because they finally found the body of their dears. I spoke to a mother who's at 42, 43 years old. She was trying to identify her son, and then she found the body of her son. She was crying. The sister also, her daughter was crying, and they were calling for the family to come and join them in the burial, because in our culture as Muslims and Arabs, we find a burial as the best fitting homage for the people who are dead. People are continuously digging out the bodies. People are continuously, and this is very ironic, they're trying to save the dead. People, when they die, are supposed to be resting in peace. And I was saying that people in Gaza, when they die, they're neither resting nor in peace. The bodies, those bodies, were collected twice by the Israeli occupation forces. They were taken for some forensic investigation, returned to Nasser Hospital. They're stockpiled in this very big hall, three different halls, and then they were buried. And then a second time, the Israeli occupation forces came back to Nasser Hospital. They invaded all different departments of the hospital. They targeted the specialized surgery department, the reception and emergency, and they once again unearthed those hundreds of bodies and took them once again. And then they returned them to this mass grave. So the suffering, even for the dead people in Gaza, is still continuous, and the heartache for their families is non-stop. Every single body that is being unearthed, you find tens of people rushing for the sake of identifying whether those are their relatives or otherwise. You see also many families looking into these individual graves in the Nasser Hospital area. You see written on the tombstone that this guy is a tall guy, he has a long hair, a gray shirt. This is all we know, and then it's up to the family to try and to find, and for people to recall what their dears were wearing the day they were parting from them, what were they wearing the day they were killed. So a very emotionally draining process. The numbers are quite shocking, but the account of the loss and the death that led to that eventual mass grave is extremely shocking, where some of the people, like you have just said, some of the people were tied, some of the people had medical accessories on their hands, like the cannulas, and they, when they were unearthed from the ground, it was apparent they were buried alive. Some people were tortured, some of the bodies were extremely mutilated, which means that those bodies, some of their organs were taken by the Israeli occupation. Some lost their eyes. I could see some bodies with no eyes. I could see some bodies with no liver, with no kidney. Some bodies that are, you see them like the outer skin is just covering the skeleton, and that's it. So the account of that experience is quite heart-wrenching. The families that have been suffering for the sake of just identifying their dears are also broken. They have been crying, but at least they say, we feel comfortable because we found our dear. So it gives you an insight, a glimpse into the suffering people of Gaza have been living. It gives you a glimpse into the bereavement the women, men, children, and girls in Gaza have been experiencing for the last 6 months or so.
Akram al-Satari, just for our audience to know, you know, whenever we speak to you, we have, there's this constant noise around you, and those are drones, flying overhead, as they have been for months now. But if you could respond, you know, the UN, the United Nations, and now also the United States, have called for an independent investigation into these mass graves. So your response to that, and we're speaking to you in Rafah. If you could also describe what conditions there are on the ground.
Well, as the independent scrutiny investigation committee that needs to be developed, I've been working in journalism for around 16 years now. I have been hearing about the independent committees, commissions, fact-finding committees, and international reports and tribunals about the situation in Gaza, looking into the particular details of the incidents that were taking place, investigating of several people in mass killing incidents, including the war in 2008, the war in 2014, and the war in 2021. I have been hearing a book about Gaza, the war in Gaza, from 2014, and I was reading the exact word that I'm going to say now. Palestinians struggle to dig out the bodies. So the thing that happened in 2014, this is something that happened in 2008, this is something that happened in 21, 22, and is still happening throughout 2023 and 2024. The international community has to preserve and observe the dictates of the international humanitarian law. The humanity at large is facing a challenge. All the political sides worldwide are asked now and expected to do something tangible for the sake of just saving the Gaza Strip. Rhetoric is no longer needed. Rhetoric is no longer satisfactory. We need them to do something to stop the things that are happening in Gaza. Some of the things that Gazans are suggesting, the no-fly zone to protect the civilians in Gaza. Some of the things that Gazans are suggesting, that Israel should be held accountable for what they call crimes that were committed against the humanity, against people, against civilians. The international humanitarian law is rich with terms and vocab that are related to what they call the civil objects. Civil objects that are protected, journalists that are protected, medical teams that are supposed to be protected, medical facilities that are supposed also to be protected. But when you review about the way that the journalists are being killed, for instance, the medical teams are being killed, for instance, you conclude that the international community is failing so far. Something tangible, statements, the condemnations, the calls for independent inquiries or commissions to look into the investigation. We need something tangible. And that something tangible has been achieved so far. And Gazans have been dying constantly because of that. Something should be done. Something swift should be done. Otherwise, the death would continue. Now in Gaza today, 79 people were killed. And an average number of around 65 to 79 is killed every day. And if nothing is done, this means the international community accepts the killing of Gazans and accepts the justification of Israel to continue that killing. Sorry. And when it comes to the situation in Rafah, around 1.4 to 1.2 million because of the influx of people from Rafah in the last few days. People are so scared because of the looming ground operation. They understand that the Israeli occupation is going to target them, and they understand that death would be chasing them. So some of them moved from Rafah. Around 150,000 Gazans have already left Rafah and moved to the area in Al-Mawasi, a buffer zone between Rafah and Khan Yunis, in the hope that they would survive. The ones who are in Rafah and the ones who are in Khan Yunis and the ones in Gaza at the entirety are on all IDPs, around 2.1 million IDPs, because of the destruction of the infrastructure, the destruction of the homes, the destruction of the streets, and because of a bombardment that has been taking their life. And those people are living in areas that have no infrastructure. No infrastructure means that they don't have water supplies that are regular. They have systems. They don't have food. They don't have even drinkable water that with which they can cook the food. They don't have houses. They're living in tents. And today is a very hot day. Today and yesterday were very hot days in this specific season. Now people in the tents are struggling. They're sweating all day. The children that have respiratory, even the adults that have some respiratory disorders are suffering more than any other people. And this suffering is continuous. And this situation, when it comes to the humanitarian situation in Gaza, is unbearable, unimaginable, unacceptable. When I tell you the situation is unimaginable, because for me, some parts of Gaza and some part of those camps that I have seen, the suffering of the people is unimaginable. You see them living just by the minimum, and even there is no minimum, and they have no other choice to continue living and waiting and hoping some solution would be developed or concluded. This is the truth about the situation. Something I have never seen in my life, let alone someone who's living thousands of miles away from Gaza. People are buried in the streets, people buried on the pavements. People are buried everywhere in their homes, and some of the bodies, around 10,000 bodies are in Gaza, are still under the rubble, and they have not been retrieved so far. You smell death everywhere. You go to the hospital that is supposed to be the temple of protection and humanity, you find the hospital totally devastated by death. You find those who were supposed to be receiving the medical treatments buried within the hospital, and you smell their decomposed body after the bodies were desecrated. and on earth, and wherever you turn, you see the children, you see the adults, you see the women and the men, the girls and the boys suffering from that unjust situation that is still continuous, and no one single international power could stop that or bring an end to that ongoing suffering and misery.
Akram al-Sathri, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Be safe. Akram is a journalist speaking to us from Rafah. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we speak with the Secretary General of Amnesty International, Agnès Callamard. Stay with us. By Alexei Lubomov, composed by John Cage in 1948. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
The reaping a harvest of terrifying consequences from escalating conflict and the near breakdown of international law. Amnesty International said yesterday as it launched its annual report on human rights in 5 countries. The report highlights Israel's assault on Gaza with evidence of war crimes continuing to mount, as well as U.S. failures to denounce rights violations committed by Israel. It also called out Russia's ongoing against Ukraine and pointed to the rise of authoritarianism and massive rights violations in Sudan, Ethiopia, and Myanmar.
Amnesty Secretary General Callamard said, quote, Israel's flagrant disregard for international law is compounded by the failures of its allies to stop the indescribable civilian bloodshed meted out in Gaza. Many of those allies were the very architects of that post-World War II system of law, end quote. Well, Agnès Callamard joins us now from London. Welcome to Democracy Now! We so appreciate you being on with us. If you can start off by talking about the situation in Gaza. You just heard in our previous segment the Gaza-based journalist describing this discovery of the hundreds of bodies in a mass medical complex following Israel's siege of the hospital. What are you calling for right now?
Thank you very much for welcoming me on your program. I have listened to the journalist, and what can I add more? Since October 7, we have been documented a plethora of violations committed first by Hamas and then by the Israeli authorities. But in particular, the Israeli authorities have been, have committed an extraordinary amount of violations of international law. The indiscriminate bombing of civilians. We know now that there is at least 30,000 of them that have been killed. 70% of the infrastructure of Gaza have been destroyed. I'm talking civilian infrastructures, schools, hospitals, cemeteries, cultural institutions. We know that there has been the highest number of journalists killed in any conflict, the highest number of humanitarian workers killed in any conflict. We know that famine is being used as a weapon of war. We know that collective punishment has been waged against the Palestinian people. And we also now know clear evidence of extrajudicial killings, as highlighted by the discovery of those mass graves that are coming on top of all the detentions and ill treatment. the scale of the violations committed over the last 6 months.